This episode is sponsored by Shopify. Shopify powers over 1.7 million entrepreneurs just like me, from first sale to full scale. Get started by building and customizing your online store with no coding or design experience. Go to shopify.com/accidentalcreative, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. How do you communicate your idea in a way that it will resonate? How do you get your work across in a way that is compelling, that is clear, that connects with your intended audience, and that actually drives people to action in some way? Listen, if you're making work, you want people to interact with that work, not just interact with it, but actually enjoy it, act on it, use it, and in some way to be changed by what you do. So whether you design or you write or you teach or you're building a product or you lead a team, how you communicate your idea is critically important. So what do great communicators do that others fail to do? Today's guest is going to help us understand that. Her name is Tamsin Webster. She has helped some of the biggest thinkers in the world share their message in a compelling way. She's also the author of a new book called Find Your Red Thread, and she's going to help us understand how to develop a through line for our work that resonates deeply with the people we are trying to reach. Well, I'm so excited to welcome to the show today Tamsin Webster, my friend, my speaking buddy, formerly speaking road buddy, where I would occasionally see her on the road speaking at the same event. She is the author of a fantastic book. It's called Find Your Red Thread, Make Your Big Ideas Irresistible. I mean, we all have to do that. Tamsin, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Oh, I'm delighted. You were a big part in it getting written, as you no doubt remember, helping me kind of make sure as I was doing my writing sessions last summer. You were very helpful in all of that and making sure that I actually got it done. So thank you.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. What's funny, there's actually this little sort of writing, this online writing group. And I think you were writing this book. I think I was editing, maybe in the late stages of editing Motivation Code at the time and sort of going through the final edits of that prior to release. And, you know, we're all, I think, experiencing, you know, COVID and all the talking about everything. You know, so it was sort of a weird time, but it's so exciting now to see this thing that you were working on as you were staring into the screen on the other side of the camera, out in the world, and not only out in the world, but I've heard you talking about this in a number of different places, venues, and shows. And it's fascinating. And it really, I think in some ways is a great synthesis of your work for the last several years, right?
I think 100%. Sort of summarizes yeah, this a lot is of that. Definitely the capturing of my thinking of at least the last 5 years when I've been doing my work this way, but imbued in it definitely is the 20 years I spent prior to that, kind of still trying to solve the same problem of how do you find the power in an idea? And more importantly, how do you communicate that power to somebody who isn't already convinced of it?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to put you on the spot because this is kind of what you do. So if someone asks you, Tamsin, what do you do? How do you talk about your work?
If I'm feeling cheeky, I usually say I'm an English to English translator. And more specifically, that I help experts translate their ideas into language and concepts that anyone can understand.
Fantastic. And you, your background, I mean, you've worked with a number of organizations. I know you spent a lot of time working with TEDx as well, right? Helping speakers pull together those very succinct, what is it, 17-minute talks? I forget how
long.
3 to
18, I've given them, yes.
18-minute talks, which is not easy to do, right?
No, no. Yeah. So, I mean, I've spent now 25 plus years in brand and message strategy. It's always been an element of what I do. And this was a thing that I saw over and over again, whether I was in an organization or working in agencies or, you know, for the past 8 years working with speakers, experts, academics, scholars on putting together TEDx talks. But whether it's a, you know, a scholar trying to put in, you know, their entire life's work into 18 minutes, or it's a founder of a technical startup trying to translate this engineering technical idea into the language of their audience that probably isn't as technical. The challenges are still the same. And I really wanted to find a way to solve that and figure out really how to reverse engineer what I learned through osmosis and did intuitively when, you know, I was the one charged with coming up with these messages. But there's only one of me, and there's millions of ideas and millions of people with those ideas. And I wanted to make it easier for those people to get those ideas out into the world so they could have the impact that they deserve.
I love that. So you introduced this phrase that I've not heard you speak about often, the red thread. I love the imagery of that. What is the red thread and why is it important?
So the red thread, as I talk about it, is the story that we tell ourselves about why something works the way that it does. And we do this all the time. I mean, anytime that anything happens in the world, like whether we do it consciously or not, and usually it's unconsciously, we're creating an explanation in our heads. And that explanation is the story that makes it make sense. And when we're gathering new information or we're hearing something for the first time, we are looking for the elements of that story. We are trying to build that story. So we're like, oh yeah, either yes, this idea makes sense and it makes sense for me, or no, it doesn't and I don't want it. So the idea of the red thread was to find and build that story so that we could just start there. We could skip over a lot of the extra stuff and really go straight to what our brains are looking for anyway.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So why is it so hard for us to communicate about something that we know so intimately? You know, so many of us, you know, we know our work inside out, or we know our concepts inside out, but it's so hard for us to explain it to other people sometimes. Why is that? Why is it the thing we know the most about is the most difficult to communicate about sometimes?
Well, that's exactly it. It is the curse of knowledge writ large. It is, and meaning that once we know something inside and out, we are able to see it in a level of detail that we find it very, very difficult to step back from. I mean, these are big, beautiful, sophisticated, nuanced ideas, and it feels almost like a disservice to our idea to somehow simplify it, because we don't want to say to someone, well, it's just this. But we have to understand that they have to hear some part of it that is interesting for them so that they can slowly get more of that. I liken it to, you know, this idea of, you know, if you've lived in a certain place all your life and you're a native to that place and you know that neighborhood like the back of your hand, you know all the shortcuts and you know all the places to go, you're going to talk about that area and navigate that area very differently than somebody who is a visitor from a foreign land, right? Yeah. And if you talk to that foreign visitor as if they're a local, they're very, very likely to get lost. It doesn't mean they're in the wrong place. It doesn't mean that you don't know what you're talking about. It just means that you are talking about it in a different version of the language. So it really is this idea of how can you speak about your idea in the language of somebody who doesn't know it yet, in the language and the point of view of someone who, and this is important, isn't already convinced that it is a good or right idea.
Right. Okay. So how, I think one of the things that struck me in the book was the fact that some people don't even know what their idea is. You know, they may have a sense of it, but they don't even, how do we begin to identify what our idea is, or even know if we really even know what our idea is yet or not?
This is going to sound like I have a hammer, so everything looks like a nail. I mean, I use the red thread method that I talk about in the book as a diagnosis. I feel like if you can't fill in the blanks of the story, then you don't actually have full clarity of your idea. And I think that's a thing that we run into a lot, that there's a very big difference between having an idea and having enough clarity of that idea that we can articulate it both in a nuanced way and in a simple way. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the do you have an idea is kind of like, can you build a story that people would tell themselves about it? not you, not your case, but can you build somebody else's case for your idea? I think that really is the test. If you can do that for your idea, then you've got a strong one. But if you can only explain your idea and you can only make somebody else who knows as much as you agree with it, like, then it doesn't mean it's not a good idea, but it means it's by definition limited in its potential impact and audience.
Yeah. Do you find, I mean, this is, so I often think about when I was first drafting my very first book, which would have been, I guess, 13 years ago now. I remember I sent an early outline to my editor, David Moldauer, and he said, "You're not writing five books, you're writing one book. Why don't you choose one of these things and do an outline about just that one section?" Because I was, you know, life in the creative on-demand world. And then we're going to talk about finding your voice. And then we're going to talk about leadership. And then we're going to talk about like how to make sure that you're making a difference on the planet or something. It was some insane like, idea set that things. Was like, yes. You know, okay, I'm going to write like the encyclopedia of, but you know, I think many of us, maybe sometimes we get trapped in that same thing, right? Where we're trying to communicate too much. We're trying to do too much with one concept or one idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we think it's, and a lot of times we think it's our one shot. So we are going to pack it all in. So analogy I often use when I'm working with clients on this is that game show, Let's Make a Deal. Do you remember that show? I mean, it's still on. Yay, Wayne Brady. Yep. But you know, the big thing, the big prize that everybody always wants on Let's Make a Deal is the car. And so what you're trying to do, like what they're trying to do is always like, guess which one the car is behind. And I liken that to, you know, talking about your idea, because you want to figure out what is the equivalent of a car, right? What's the car in your message? What is that thing that's in your message that's going to want someone like that provides that irresistible outcome to them? They're going to like do whatever they can. They're going to keep listening. They're going to ask you questions because you've told them, hey, you know what? In my idea is the equivalent of a car. Now, so you have to be able to figure out like, what's that one thing, you know, and I've said it this way too, that you can't give people more than one front door. You have to give them like, they only get to choose one door, right? And you want to make it clear that the thing that they're going to get is that car. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that happens sometimes in Let's Make a Deal is if they play the game right, they don't just win what's behind the door with the car. They actually win what's behind all the doors. And that's really, I think, the mental model to have for your message is that draw them in with that single irresistible thing that like they really want a car. Great. If you sign up with this idea, you're going to get that car or the equivalent. And you didn't know this when you chose it, but you're also going to get these other things. And so I refer to that in the book as the goal revisited, or to borrow a phrase from Seth Godin, the free prize inside. And a lot of times that's how I can, you know, soothe my clients when they're like, but it does all these other things. I'm like, don't worry, we're still going to get that in there. It's just not what we're going to hang on the front door. Right. What we're going to hang on the front door is the thing that's really relevant and attractive to the person you're talking to right now.
Right. All right. So I want to just briefly, I mean, there's so much for us to unpack in this book, and we're not obviously going to be able to get around to everything, but I want to talk about kind of the four, statements that comprise your red thread. Would you be willing to sort of give us sort of an overview of what those four components are that comprise the story that you tell?
Yeah, the four primary ones is a goal. So establishing something that your audience already wants but doesn't yet have. The second thing is introducing a problem that must be solved before they can get that goal. So even if they're trying to solve a problem that they know about, we need to introduce a problem that they don't know about that's really getting in their way. Typically, that's a problem of perspective. I spend quite a bit of time talking about that in the book. But that's the second really element of this story that we're planning in our heads. The third element draws directly from storytelling, and that's something I call the truth. So it's a piece of information. It's something that should sound and feel inarguable to the person, that to your audience, but it's something that, in other words, feels true. But it's something that, because it's true, it puts that goal, what they want, in jeopardy as long as they hold on to their previous perspective. That's part of the problem. So that goal, problem, truth. And then the last major part of the red thread is the change. Because in storytelling, that truth, that moment of truth, forces a choice. And so something always changes after that moment of truth. Either somebody, you know, decides they want something else or they decide to do something else. But when it comes to having somebody act on your idea, ideally you want them to say, oh yeah, your idea, that's the thing I want to do differently. So that's the change. And then kind of nestled up under the change is a fifth one called the actions. And the actions are really just, what do you need to do to make that change concrete? So it's goal, problem, truth, change, action. And those are the five elements of that story we tell ourselves. And if you can fill in all those blanks of your idea, then you can be pretty confident that you've got one that's strong enough to stand the test of time.
Hey everyone, we're going to get back to the conversation with Tamsin in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know this episode is brought to you by Shopify. That sound makes me smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like myself the resources once reserved for big business. Customized to my needs with a great-looking online store that brings my idea to life and tools to manage my day-to-day and drive sales. Making your idea real opens endless possibilities. Listen, it's a journey, but that's the beauty of entrepreneurship. Believe me, this podcast started as a side hustle. It started as something that I did just because I wanted to serve my fellow creative professionals, people who have to create on demand. I didn't intend to start a business, but here we are. And maybe you are like me, and maybe you have an idea, but you don't know where to start. I love how Shopify makes it easy for anyone to successfully run their own business. Shopify powers over 1.7 million entrepreneurs just like me, from first sale to full scale. Every 28 seconds, a small business owner makes their first sale on Shopify. So get started by building and customizing your online store with no coding and no design experience. You can access powerful tools to help you find customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. You can gain knowledge and confidence with extensive resources to help you succeed. Plus, with 24/7 support, you're never alone. It's more than a store. Shopify grows with you. This is possibility powered by Shopify. So go to shopify.com/accidentalcreative, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/accidentalcreative right now. shopify.com/accidentalcreative. And now back to our conversation with Tamsin Webster. In your experience, where do people tend to fall down the most of those five? Is there one that you find that clients tend to struggle with the most?
They struggle the most with the, what I call the problem or the problem pair, the two-part problem. I mean, each of them builds on each other. So you can't really figure out what that problem is until you figure out what the goal question is. So sometimes that's troublesome because it goes back to that let's make a deal thing. They want to say, well, here, like they must want this thing that I know they really want deep down. Like, no, you need to do the thing that they are actually looking for right now. But the problem pair and the truth both can be pretty difficult because, you know, something I said earlier comes into play here. One of the dangers when you have this idea or when you're an expert in something and you're an expert in your idea is that you're already convinced that it's right. And your brain has essentially like erased the steps that it took to decide that it was right. Like you don't really remember what they are. And so when you talk to somebody else about your idea, you tend to skip over the, well, you want this thing? Well, here's the solution. And look at all these other benefits that you're going to get. But that's the argument of somebody who already believes it's right. So the reason why people tend to struggle with this problem and the truth piece is that a lot of times, you know, their unique perspective on their idea and that truth that powers that perspective are very much part of their operating system. They're so much a part of how they already see the world that it just doesn't occur to them that they have to be explicit about it. But it's that explicit nature of like calling out, hey, most people look at it this way, I look at it this way, that not only makes the before and after clearer for your audience, but it's also an enormous source of potential differentiation for your idea. And then that truth statement is really what locks it in. So, you know, I've spent, like I said, 25 years in brand and messaging strategy, and the vast majority of sales and marketing messages out there really do skip from problems straight to solution. And even a lot of the guidelines that are out there about using story as far as messages skip over this moment of truth. But there isn't a single story that doesn't have that moment of realization, of choice, and therefore, in my opinion, nor should any message, right? You've got to give them something that just makes that problem impossible to ignore if they really want to answer that question, if they really want to achieve that goal.
What makes for a good moment of truth?
It needs to feel true to the audience. Ideally, a great moment of truth is inarguable, right? It's something that they already believe someplace else in the world. So, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book is it can be really useful to start with things that fill that category, like mathematical principles, scientific principles, proverbs, you know, sayings like seeing is believing. Because if somebody believes that something is true, you know, over there, then they're likely going to agree that it's true over here in your idea too. And yeah. I've just found that over the years that it's a lot easier to base your argument for your idea on something you don't have to convince people of, right? Like you don't have to like let me prove to you this is true. You're going to say, well, because this is true, this is why I've done this. And it sounds very similar, but that subtle shift makes all the difference between whether or not you are trying to convince someone or whether or not they're simply agreeing that things are, in fact, the way that they are. And that usually leads to a much better resolution in my mind, which is, in essence, they've convinced themselves. And that tends to be a much more stable and long-term agreement and shift in thinking or behavior. And fundamentally, I think if you've invested all this time and money and energy in your idea or your product or your service, I think we want that, right? We want something that isn't just a one-time action. We really want that enduring, sustainable shift.
Yeah, well, that gets to something you write in the book. You say humans aren't rational decision makers. They're rationalizing decision makers. Could you explain that a little more? Talk a little more about that?
Yes, I mean that's an adaptation of a concept from the psychologist Leon Festinger. Still, never figured out which way is the right way to say it. But I think it's one of those things where we know that to be true. We experience like that's a great true statement in and of itself. Where you know we make decisions gut and instinct. Daniel Kahneman talks about this as you know fast and slow thinking. Like the first decision is usually from that fast. Not rational at all. It's intuitive. It's instinctive. It's based on pattern recognition. And then once we've made that decision, then we go back and build a story to justify it. And, you know, that piece of it is just endlessly fascinating to me. Because we know that we do that and we do it in very particular ways. It's always going to happen. So that's really where I wanted to start with it. That was part of my hypothesis with the red thread in the first place. It's like, well, what if we just started with that story? What if we tried to build that story, the story that somebody would tell themselves? Because I forget who said this, but the only way, a story researcher named Kendall Haven. He said, really, you know, these stories that we have to explain why things are the way they are very, very stable and they already exist. Which means the only way to shift that story is to replace it with a better one. And so that's really what the red thread is designed to do, is to say, hey, audience, like if you've got this question, I believe I have a better answer, but you have to make that story for why that's the better answer be one that that person would actually make themselves. And that means doing some work to figure out what is it that they believe right now? How is it that they're looking at the world right now? What is their point of view that would turn them from somebody who doesn't believe this is the right answer to somebody who does? And I think it's hard work. You know, it's deceptively simple. I've had people say about the book that it's a very big book in a small package. You know, it's a very big little book, which I love. Once you get the hang of it, and I've seen this happen again and again with my clients, that it really does start to be a way to make what has previously been for a lot of us an invisible pattern of thinking visible. And like most things, once you can see the pattern, it gives you a very powerful tool because then you can improve it, strengthen it, redirect it, adapt it, all of those things that a lot of times we're looking for when we're trying to get our ideas out there.
Right. The book's called Find Your Red Thread. The author is Tamsin Webster. Tamsin, if people want to come find you and learn more about your work, or maybe they want to work with you, where can they go?
TamsinWebster.com. I am literally the only Tamsin Webster in the universe, at least that it's available by Google search. So it's a great place to start. So you can, all things Tamsin are there. So sign up for a newsletter, get to the book. We're still offering goodies with the book if you let us know that you've bought it. See how I work with clients and get a sense of what you might want to do too.
Fantastic. Well, Tamsin, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Todd.
Well, I learned a ton from this conversation. I hope that you did as well. Again, the book is called Find Your Red Thread. The author is Tamsin Webster. The Axon Creative is part of the Airwave Media Network. Visit airwavemedia.com for more fine shows like this. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.